coming back to the mechanism that allows a partial compensation of the phase shift between two communicating nodes due to their reciprocal distance, slide 109 tries to explain better what is the situation. In the upper part we have the two nodes A and B that exchange specific information. It could be a bit that establishes the arbitration on the bus between the two nodes. Here we have the situation of the bit time without any compensation. So we have the red block, the synchronization segment, the two phase segment 1 and phase segment 2 in green and in blue, and another bit following the previous one. The two black arrows demonstrate the delay due to the distance between the two nodes that in this case is supposed to be 3 time quantums. So the value that node B wants to write into the network will be perceived by the node A after 3 TQ. And the same for the value that node A writes onto the network from the point of view of the node B. The problem is related to the fact that theoretically the sample point is the border between the green block and the blue block, the phase segment 1 and the segment 2. But in reality, the sample point can occur in every instant after the synchronization segment and before the next one. So we don't have any warranty that node A, for example, if it writes a recessive value on the network, will feel, will be aware of the bit written by the node B that perhaps could be dominant. In that case, node A, that would be the loser of the arbitration, instead understands that it is the winner and will continue in the transmission, so generating a conflict with B. In the lower part of the figure, we see what happens, on the other hand, if we introduce a compensation segment between the synchronization 1 and the phase segment block. The compensation segment is, in this case, equal to 2 times the delay between one node and the other one, just to take into account both the time necessary for arriving to B from A and vice versa. Now, if we consider the previous situation, it is clear that the delay will no more affect the situation, the arbitration between the two nodes, because the time into which the two informations between A and B are exchanged is within the yellow block, within the compensation segment. And here we are making the hypothesis that the two nodes write at the same time the bit onto the network. But this mechanism can allow to us also to compensate a phase shift between the two nodes equal to three time quantums, because if you imagine that the node B writes its information not at the beginning of the yellow block, but after the delay that we have really considered, we see that the arrow, the information, arrives still at the border of the yellow block, and in any case before the phase segment blocks into which the sampling is done, so allowing node A to understand in any case that it has lost the arbitration. This is what the second red dotted line arrow tries to show in the figure. If the compensation block can be used to take into account the delay due to the distance between two communicating nodes, the phase segments can be lengthened or shortened to compensate variations in local clocks. That is an issue, an aspect of the general problem of the synchronization between two communicating nodes. The synchronization among nodes is made on a recessive dominant transition and keeps the distance between the edge and the sample so as to be always the same. The edges are detected on every time quantum by comparing the present level of the line with the relative one to the last sample point, and if the two levels are changed, two possible actions are taken. The first is called hard synchronization. The bit time, in other words, is reset to the moment when the edges arrive, when the edge arrives. This synchronization is performed every time the start of a frame arrives relative to the node that begins the transmission. Conversely, a bit resynchronization can be performed. In this case, the phase segments are lengthened or shortened, considering when the edge arrives. If it arrived after the synchronization segment, the phase shift is considered positive, and PS1, the phase segment 1, will be lengthened. In the other case, if the edge arrives before the synchronization segment, PS will be made shorter. The maximum shortening elongation is called synchronization jump width, SJW, goes from 1 to 4 time quantums. Beyond this limit, the phase shift cannot be completely compensated by only in part, and an error equal to the real phase error minus SJW remains. In other words, the synchronization is performed not only to compensate clock variations, but also to compensate the presence or an eventual noise or due to the arbitration. As we already said, the synchronization among the nodes is done when the first node begins to transmit. However, since it is not said that this node will win the arbitration, the other nodes must synchronize with the winner, and this operation is continuously performed. Between two successive points, only one synchronization can be done. The same operation is done in the acknowledge field, where the sender and the receiver synchronize themselves with the bit of reception happened. We will see later in the format of the frames that are exchanged between the nodes what is the significance of such a remark. The example shown in slide 112 perhaps could help to understand. We have three streams, let's say, that is, we have three situations into which the bits are sent. We can say that the central one is the ideal one, while the upper one is the situation into which the edge arrives after the synchronization segment, and the lower one is the situation into which the edge arrives before the synchronization segment. Let's go into the details about them. In the upper picture, we see that the edge, the commutation between recessive and dominant, as we said, arrives a few time quantums after the red block, the synchronization segment, and is in the area corresponding to the PS1. We have said that the continuous monitoring of the line allows to the CAN controller to be aware of this phenomenon. So the phase segment 1 is made longer, so as the distance between the moment into which the late edge, let's say, occurs and the sample point is the same as it would have been without any delay due to the difference in the clocks. So PS1, the green block, we see that is longer, three time quantums, that is the distance between the moment into which the edge would have been occurred and the moment into which the late edge has really occurred. Conversely, let's take a look to the lower stream, to the lower situation. In this case, we see that the edge arrives into an area that corresponds to the blue block, to the phase segment 2. In this case, the edge is considered as an early edge. In other words, the algorithm, let's say, considers it as arrived before the next synchronization segment. Now, the policy will try to carry out again the principle that the distance in time quantums between the moment into which the edge arrives and the sample point should be the same as it would have been without any problem. This requires that the phase segment 2 is made shorter and the red block, the synchronization segment, disappear. In other words, looking at the picture, we see that we need to have seven time quantums between an edge and the sample point. And if you look at the picture, you see that the phase segment 2 has been shortened one time quantum together with the synchronization segment that has disappeared. This allows us to establish the distance between the early edge and the sample point that is exactly the same as in the ideal case. One blue time quantum, two yellow, let's say, time quantums corresponding to the compensation segment, and the same four time quantums in the phase segment 1 in the green block as before. The total is 7 as expected. In the slide 113, on the other hand, the mechanism that allows to compensate, to eliminate the presence of the noise spikes is presented. Let's remark that such a kind of mechanism shows a limited efficacy, as we will see. In the first part of the picture, we see a spike, that is an unexpected commutation that happens, for example, after the compensation yellow block, and corresponds to an edge from a recessive bit to a dominant level. So it is very dangerous in terms of, for example, arbitration. Since the SJW, the synchronization jump width, is supposed to be greater than the phase error, that is the delay with which such a kind of noise spike arrives, with respect to the synchronization block, the green block, the phase segment 1, is made longer by the same quantity, and we see that this is equivalent to filter out the noise spike. In fact, the sample point will be located into an instant of time into which the line, the value of the bit, will be come back to its original recessive value. So the presence of the noise for the system is completely transparent, and the synchronization between the nodes, the arbitration, will continue as the noise spike wouldn't be happened. But we said that such a kind of policy has a limited effect. In the lower part of the picture, on the other hand, we see a situation into which the same spike is not filtered. In other words, the synchronization jump width, in this case, is lower than the phase error with which such a kind of spike arrives. This makes the sample point to fall within the range, let's say, the time interval into which the spike is still active. So the node will sample a level that is dominant, in this case erroneously dominant, and the arbitration, for example, will be compromised. So such a kind of mechanism is the same as the lengthening or shortening of the phase segments to compensate clock differences between the nodes, and allows to filter those noise spikes that arrive into a time that is necessarily lower than the SJW to allow the mechanism to work properly. And finally, to conclude this discussion about the CAN bus physical level, a couple of words about the two conceptual blocks of which the physical level is made, the so-called physical medium attachment and the medium-dependent interface. The first one defines the structure of the connection that every node must have with the bus through three components: a transceiver, that is a bidirectional buffer that performs physically the access to the bus, detecting the difference, for example, between the two lines, CAN high and CAN low, and performing the conversion between the voltage levels that are present internally to the node and externally onto the line. A controller that manages the transmission reception from and to the bus. And a microcontroller that can be also represented by a DSP, the real intelligent part of the node that control the other two. The medium-dependent interface, instead, is the level into which the physical and the electrical characteristics of the connections in terms of type, adaptation impedance, line delay, and so on, are defined. Coming now to the tasks that are assigned to the data link layer, we must say that the DLL is charged with the definition of the message format, the validation of them, the eventually present error management, and the error active nodes confinement, and finally it is charged with the management of the arbitration. The first issue is related to the composition and the recognition of the correct format of the message that must be transmitted or that have been received. We can have five possible messages, five possible types of messages. The first is the so-called data frame. In this format, we have, together with several informations that are necessary to manage the data themselves, those data that are really exchanged between the sender and the receiver. The remote frame, on the contrary, is similar to the data frame, but without data. This because the handshake protocol requires that one node puts onto the shared network a remote frame relative to a particular information that is needed, and then recognizing that remote frame, the node owners of that information will reply with a data frame that is similar in terms of a format but filled with the data that are required. We have also an error frame that typically is sent by a node that detects an error and asks for the retransmission of a message. It is not possible that the nodes raise error, let's say, request management freely. In other terms, if a node exceeds a particular error rate that is calculated in the node itself, that node will self-exclude itself from the communication network. Such a kind of policy makes the communication on the CAN bus very robust and makes the error on a communication between many nodes a very rare event. There is also an overload format that is an answer that is sent by a node required to provide an information, but in that moment particularly dizzy. Even in this case, CAN foresees a mechanism just to exclude a node that too many times answered to be busy. If one node is not able to participate to the communication, it is right to temporarily exclude it from the communication itself, and CAN foresees such a kind of mechanism. Finally, we have the interframe space, that is a sequence of bits conceived just to separate a data frame from a remote frame and vice versa, but also to allow specific mechanisms that permit to suspend those nodes that are very error-prone. We will see all these policies. But in any case, we have understood that in the data link layer, we have the definition of the format of the messages, but also a way to validate them through suitable checksum or cyclic redundancy checks or other algorithms that we will consider later. And we have also the management of the error. So as when an error frame is written into the network by a specific node that detects a critical situation, all the other nodes must recognize this situation and in turn must signal an error frame throughout the network. And we have also mentioned the policy that allow to such nodes that frequently raise an error exception to continue the transmission, but other nodes that more frequently raise up error exception are confined, let's say, outside from the community. Again, the management is performed at the level of the data link layer. Moreover, we will see how the data link layer of every node implements the arbitration for the possess of the line onto which communicate a specific message. But now let's go further and let's take a look to the data frame that is the sequence of the bits containing the real message, or better, the real part of a communication message that we want to exchange with all the nodes in the network at that moment. First of all, we have a start of a frame, a bit that is univocally recognized as the beginning of a frame because it is dominant, and this is the same for all the nodes that at a certain point decide to communicate to enter into the network. But now we have the arbitration field that can be made of 11 bits or 29 bits depending on the particular release of the CAN bus you are considering, but in any case represent the identifier of the node or of the message content. That on the basis of the mechanism that we have already partially described and that we will see more into the details later, establish who is the node enabled to continue its particular transmission, avoiding to destroying the messages of all the other nodes that at that moment tried to communicate something onto the network and allowing only one to continue. This arbitration field is also equipped, let's say, with a remote transmission request bit, RTR, that in the specific case of the data frame is dominant, while in the case of the remote frame, that we will see in a moment, is recessive. Since the two frames are basically equal, apart the content of the data bytes that are not present in the remote frame, this allows to establish arbitration between a data frame and a request frame of the same message, of the same information, that perhaps are written into the network at the same time. This way, only the data frame will continue the transmission, and this is clearly reasonable because if the information that is going to be requested is already in progress, there is no reason to accept that request. After this bit, we have the so-called control field made of 6 bits. 4 of them specify the length of the data field that can go from 0 up to 8 bytes, while the last 2, called ID and R0, are reserved to the operating system, let's say. Then we have the data frame that, I repeat, can be from 0 to 8 data bytes. And finally, we have a CRC field, a cyclic redundancy check field, made of 15 bits plus one that is by default recessive. these bits are added to the frame, so as the sequence of the frame plus those bits is perfectly divisible by a predefined polynomial term that is known and shared between all the nodes that in a specific moment are into the network. If the validation is okay, in the successive field, the acknowledgement field, a dominant bit is written. In fact, this field ACK is made of two bits, ACK slot and ACK delimiter. By default, they are both recessive. If at least one destination node received the message and this message was correct, it will overwrite the ACK slot with a dominant bit that will be read by all the nodes in the network, so everyone knows that the transmission was okay and was carried out in the correct way. Finally, the data frame is terminated by an end of frame field that consists of seven recessive bits. Looking at the slide 117, we have the structure of the remote frame that is very similar to the data frame just now described. So, apart the frame with the data byte, all the other components of the frame are the same. This means that only a few comments are necessary to be done in this case. Two important differences are present. The first has been already mentioned, no data field. The second is that the RTR bit after the identifier is forced to be recessive, so as to specify that this is a remote frame. As we have said, such a kind of remote frame is put onto the network just to ask those data that are specified in the identifier. The transmitter, that is the producer of the information, will answer with the information required in the data field. The slide 118 shows the concept of interframe space. An interframe space is a sequence of recessive bits that separate a data frame and a remote frame, or vice versa. In other words, the protocol conceives a kind of pause between the request of an information and the information given onto the bus. The interframe space is not used if an overload frame or and an error frame are sent. Consider that overload and error can be sent separately but also consecutively. In other words, if the network features a situation into which a node is particularly busy and cannot accept more requests, or if error has been detected by one node, the enter frame is not sent, in the sense that the protocol envisions the management of the critical situation, or envision the need of avoiding to send further requests to the part of the network that is at present overloaded. An interframe space consists of two fields together with a final one. The first field is called intermission and typically is made by three first bits, definitively recessive, into which it is not allowed data frame or a remote frame. If something happens during these three bits, is an overload frame that prevents from sending the remaining ones and let's say freeze the situation just to avoid to increase the situation of overload. This is a specific situation and a specific constraint because we don't have any other moment into which the overload, we will see how it has been conceived, can be sent. For example, an overload can't break a data frame or a remote frame, so every request and every information provided goes to the end, is completed, in other words. The critical situation will be detected and managed after a request is completed or the information requested has been given to the network and in particular to the nodes that asked for it. The second field is called suspend transmission and is a specific field related to the presence of nodes that are characterized by errors. However, the error rate of these nodes is not so high to exclude them from the communications. These nodes are called error passive. So, a certain degree of slowing down their communication rate towards the network is conceived and is implemented through such a kind of field. 8 recessive bits are used only if a node belongs to this category. Only if a node is characterized by a transmission error rate not negligible, but not so high to put down it from the community. In other words, if a node is error passive, the node must wait 8 bits before performing every kind of communication, but if in the meanwhile another node starts a transmission, the present node can receive the message. Moreover, if a node is not error passive, so it features a good error rate, or it is only a receiving node, the suspend transmission field doesn't exist. And finally, the interframe space ends with a sequence of recessive bits called bus idle, which is not really belonging to the interframe concept, but simply means that the bus is free and basically we have permission to transmit that is given to every other node present into the network. This sequence is not fixed but will end when a start of a frame of a new data or remote frame will be encountered since one node wants to transmit. Another frame that is used in the communication, as we have already said, to manage specifically the situation into which a node is particularly characterized by an overhead due to other operations that he is performing, is called overload. An overload frame is a sequence of bits that delays the emission of a data frame or a remote frame if a node is busy and cannot correctly process other data. It is allowed to send an overload frame only correspondingly to the first three bits of an intermission frame. This is, we have said, a specific condition that allows to recognize this particular condition that otherwise cannot be expressed, let's say, in other parts of the frames of the communication, because if sent in other moments, it will be interpreted as an error and not as an overload signaling. In fact, the frame consists of two fields. The first is called flag, and the second is called delimiter. The flag is made by six dominant bits. We say once more that they are sent within the intermission field, the three first bits of an interframe. And this is necessary because otherwise we understand that those six dominant bits would violate the so-called stuffing rule. And this means that we need to avoid this misunderstanding. So the condition is send these six bits in a specific moment, that kind of pause between a data frame and a remote frame, and it will be properly recognized. Otherwise, it will be interpreted as an error related to the violation of the stuffing rule. When these six dominant bits are sent to the bus in the proper moment, all the other nodes in the bus will detect this condition and will answer on their turn with an overload flag. This means, as shown in the picture in slide 119, that the overload flag part of the overload frame can be extended due to the superposition of the overload flags that arrive from the other nodes. And clearly we have six dominant bits and other six dominant bits that will be written onto the bus and will, let's say, express the acknowledgement of the condition by the other nodes. The overload frames clearly delay the communication between all the nodes, and therefore there is a mechanism that try to limit this situation just to avoid to block too much the communication rate, the throughput, in other words. This mechanism foresees that only two consecutive overloads can be sent by the same receiver node. Otherwise, a suitable mechanism is provided to confine these nodes so as they don't affect too much the communication into the network. Finally, we have a delimiter field that is made of 8 recessive bits that basically mean the frame is in its own final part.